Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, welcome to Following On County Cricketer. I'm John Norman from Talk Sport alongside former county championship winner, well, current county championship winner. How do you describe it? Anyway, won it twice. Steve Harmison, as well as Nick Friend from the Cricketer magazine. George DeBell's in the car on the way up to Leeds. This show is being recorded on a Tuesday and will go out Thursday morning ahead of that third test match between England and New Zealand. We're not going to be talking too much international cricket, though. We're talking county cricket, T20 Blast, county championship, and all that jazz. You can get in contact with the show either via Twitter or on YouTube, which is where you can find the show, or on podcast or on TalkSport 2. We're everywhere, essentially. This is Following On County Cricketer. Well, Nick, Harmy, another very busy week for cricket where the test game's been turned on its head. Suddenly we're the best test side ever. I tell you what, for the last, I would say, 10 years, I've been asked the question by various presenters on TalkSport when England have been set a chase of about 300 on the final day. You know, why can't they just go out and hit the ball like they do in white ball cricket? You know, and I've always given the same answer: different ball, different field positions allowed, different tactics, you know, different pitch degradation, all of that kind of stuff. And then after Johnny Bairstow and Ben Stokes did what they did at Trent Bridge, I realised I've been chatting absolute nonsense. Actually, it is as simple as just going out there and trying to win a game of cricket. But that's a discussion for another week. Top line this week is going to have to be an article that's been rumbling around. We've seen it here and there. But Lizzie Ammon, again in the Times, suggesting that there's going to be huge changes to the county setup. Some of the changes mooted are a 12-team first division with an almost feeder league below it. Number 12 is important, isn't it? Because you need 12 counties to agree anything if changes are going to get through. As well as the first two rounds to be played in either Sri Lanka or the Caribbean, maybe the UAE, which I'm sure if you're a BBC county cricket commentator, you'll be delighted to hear. A reduction in the NatWest Blast, Vitality Blast schedule, which I can kind of get on board with a little bit, but this is kind of where the 100 came in and was always going to get to this point. I'll start with you, Nick. First up, you know, if there are to be any changes to county cricket, you know, which ones would you essentially be on board with?
I think there are obviously going to be changes of some description, aren't there? Because there's a review going on, and there's been a lot of talk about the fact there will be some changes. I genuinely don't think anything's been decided. It wouldn't surprise me to see a reduction of games in the Blast slightly. I do think a 14 game group stage is pretty long, and I've almost found it harder to follow this year in its sort of single block, you know, being played from beginning to end with finals day in July, than I have done in the past, in a way, which sounds odd to say, but it's almost meant there's been so many games. You've had more games. It's almost felt like there'd be more games on days when there weren't games in the past. You sort of look up on a Monday afternoon and there's something going on and you're almost talking about the Blast. I think I mentioned on this, mentioned on the podcast before, I think you're almost talking about the Blast and talking about how well someone played 2 days beforehand. You don't realise they've nicked off for naught since then, kind of thing. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a slightly... There are ways of doing it as well. I think if you go back to three groups of six, obviously you can then play home and away and have 10 games each. And there are ways of doing it that I don't think would necessarily take away from the product. Although, obviously the clubs consider home games in the Blast to be, you know, the money spinners, the seven home games, and obviously that will cause issues, and understandably so. I think the way the championship's been played this year, on the pitch it's been played on, and I think with the weather we've had early season as well, I think it's sort of probably clouded what happens next, I think, in a way, because I think a lot of the stuff, I think me and Harmony were talking before the show started, that a lot of the stuff that people wanted to get for the championship this year actually and going forwards, I think we've almost been given, haven't we? Whether it's by, but as I say, whether it's because of pitches or the balls or the very dry, very warm weather we've had, I don't know. But I mean, it feels like by accident or by design, we've sort of stumbled across a championship summer that actually has produced, you know, Matt Potts, for example, in someone who took wickets on flat surfaces, went to Test cricket and took wickets, started very well, has convincingly picked Jamie Overton, I guess, on a similar premise that he's done well in county cricket, bowling quickly, getting stuff out of often quite lifeless flat surfaces, good for batting. And it's also meant that Alex Lees came into the summer on the back of two big hundreds for Durham, and even Zach Crawley, who hadn't had a particularly good start to the season with Kent, I think got two big 50s, I think, before big 50s, two 50s before he came into that England side too. So, and obviously Harry Brook as well is waiting in the wings, and there is currently a line of guys waiting who are in nick, which we've perhaps not had in the past for a number of reasons. But yeah, it does make it slightly odd then, doesn't it, talking about all these potential things that could change next year, given that actually what we've seen this year has been fairly promising. Certainly the way the cricket's been played and the number of games that have gone 4 days and the number of, you don't want high scoring boring draws, but I think you'd rather in a sense have those than a long stream of games ending in 2 days, which you know we have had in the past.
So you would or wouldn't countenance a reduction in county championship games?
I don't particularly like the 10-game proposal, to be completely honest. They do it in the Shield, it's at the Sheffield Shield, and it's not like it wouldn't be unique. And I'm fairly sure that no country plays more domestic first-class cricket than we do anyway. So I can certainly understand the arguments for. It does feel like there's too much cricket at times, doesn't there? I mean, as much as we all love the game, there is a lot of it. So I can understand a lot of it. But without playing on the weather thing, look, you know, we've had a pretty dry summer so far, but there's nothing to say you're not going to lose two or three rounds next year, and then suddenly you've got a seven or eight game season. No, I've just enjoyed what we've seen this year, I think on balance, no, but I can see where the argument stems from, based more on what's happened in the past than this year.
Harmy, what about you? As a former player, but also as somebody who supports a club that doesn't get international cricket, that doesn't have a 100 team, you know, a reduction in cricket, how would that sit with Durham members? How would that sit with yourself as a former Durham player?
I think it's a hard one because the members are, a lot of the members of the 4-day cricket are over the edge where tradition is huge. And I think we have to move on. The game's moving on, the game's evolving. So there's a fine balance of what you need, what you require, but also to have the best product. And unfortunately, no matter what, and no member will like me for saying this, we can't get away that the white ball cricket is taking over. It's where it makes the money, and that's what drives the game and keeps the game. So there's a fine balance between the two. I think what Nick said is right. Whichever way you look at it, whether it was an accident, the ball's not being very good, we're getting a better surface, we're getting better cricket, and we will get better cricket because directors of cricket, academy directors, are now trawling around 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds to try and find the next fast bowler or the next mystery spinner, because the days of, in my county, the likes of Chris Rushworth, down at Kent, Darren Stevens, one or two others, Luke Fletcher, 78, 80-mile-an-hour bowlers that just put it there and thereabouts have been so good for the last 5 years. On these surfaces, they're not in the game. And we're trying to produce test match cricket. I put a tweet out. I never tweet. But I commented on the Durham game against Leicester the other day. And obviously I sat with Marcus North for a bit, a very, very good friend of mine who's doing a great job at Durham. And I tweeted about the club going forward, and they are going forward. And it's like, but unfortunately, they haven't got the financial resources to compete with some of the big boys. And when you're trying to navigate a group of, Durham have only got 15 professional cricketers, and they've got a few rookies, and then they've got the academy and everything that goes with it. Financially, we can't compete. We try to compete. We can't. But because we've only got 15 cricketers, and two of them 15 are Ben Stokes and Mark Wood. And then you throw in Potts leaving, going to England, Carr leaving, going to England, Leeds leaving, going to England. Then all of a sudden, the product that you're putting out there from Durham County Cricket Club, Marcus North, James Franklin and beyond, that will get better because of the next generation coming through. We'll be given their chance. We might go through some hardship, but we'll come good in the end. That's what Durham have done for years. Myself and Paul went. And then, you know, we took it on the chin for a little bit. What we do, the likes of Mustard and Onions and Plunkett, next generation, got their heads from 17 to 21, got in the England team. They went, next ones come, Stoneman, Borthwick and all that. So there's a bigger picture in the county setups that you have to look at. Producing the best pitch possible, which produces the best cricket possible, which produces the best cricketers. Now, at the minute, the system has got too many games. I'm looking at the schedule for some of these teams. They've got no break in between. There's no recovery time in between. And gone are the days of my generation and the one before that, Goffey's, and the one before that again, saying, nah, we played three-day games. We played 2 days here. We went off and played a one-day game on a Sunday and come back and finished it. Them days have gone. So there's a fine balance and a fine art. We have to find some formula to see if we can get the games down to 12 games. If we play 12 first-class games a season, I think that's the right number. How we get there, not so sure. But I think we need to get to that point. And I think work back from that point. The blast, I can see the reduction in the blast. I would actually go the other way. I'd try and add teams to the blast. And I'd try and add the Netherlands, Scotland and Ireland and have three groups of seven with one of the emerging nations in and play. And then you play 12 group games and you go straight to finals day. So you basically play 14 games if you win, 13 games if you get to finals day. That's where I would go down that road from the blast. But that would always feed into the 100 for me. The 100, the draft for the England players at the 100 is straight after the blast. So the English players go into the blast, the 100 draft, straight after the Vitality blast. And it rewards little Johnny, who's had an unbelievable blast, who's on a 25, 30 grand contract in his county. He's had a good year. He gets a contract in the 100. Because at the minute, no matter how well you do in the blast, you're not available till the following year. So I think there are things that need looking at. It is, our system's a little bit flawed. But I don't think it's as broken as what a lot of people think, because what we've stumbled on is flat pitches with balls that aren't doing as much. So we are eventually going to have to produce fast bowlers. Because if not, batters are just going to rack up, run and run and run, and games are going to finish in a draw. So the thought will be the other way and try and bring the game closer together. And it might take some time, but we'll be better for it.
The one thing I'd add on that is, I think what will happen next year as well is the 50-over comp will come more into play because there's 50-over World Cup at the end of the year. So where now my personal view on that is I couldn't tell you the last England player who was picked to play an ODI on the strength of his 50-over form. So I'm not convinced that it's a massive issue, because I think England's... I mean, we saw last week with the world record total, didn't we, that England are, frankly, playing their 50-over games as extended T20s these days, aren't they? Almost with certainly the skill sets, you just do them for longer. And, you know, where there are those more specialised positions, like Joe Root's position at three, Joe Root does it. So it's not really... they're not desperately looking for someone to fill that role at the moment. But it wouldn't surprise me nonetheless if there was an attempt to get the best white ball players playing the 50-over comp next year. As I say, as much as I don't necessarily think Josh Butner needs to play a domestic 50-over comp to be ready to play a 50-over World Cup come the end of the year. Likewise, one thing that Harvey touched on actually with talk about recovery time between games, I think what's interesting there is it's almost not only recovery time, it's sort of the time to work on your game. And I think that is, when we talk about there being too much cricket, it's almost not just the bodies. It's the fact that if you're out of nick, you're out of nick. Because your only real opportunity to get yourself back into the runs or to, you know, to work on your action again is almost mid-September, late September, isn't it? Once you're all done, then you sort of go to the winter. So basically, if you lose form in mid-July, there's no chance really to take a step back for a week, 2 weeks, and look at how you're going to get your game back. And you're almost looking to rediscover your rhythm in game. And if you rediscover your rhythm in game and you're out of rhythm, then you get dropped. And then suddenly the only time you've got to work in your game is when you've been pushed out the side by someone else. If that guy that makes the runs, you're not getting back in anyway. So until the next year. So certainly I spoke to a couple of the, I think David Betty and Ricardo Vasconcelos last, at the start of the season actually, who'd spent the winters in South Africa. And I think it was Vasconcelos who said that he'd not hit a ball. He'd not played a game at all. He just hit balls through the winter. It wasn't about going back and playing club cricket or provincial cricket or whatever. It was literally about, what did I feel like I slightly lost last summer in the sort of, you know, mid grind, as it were, and what did I need to sort of put right? So there's, I think, as much the recovery time, it's also that time to become a better cricketer during the season that I think is really important, that perhaps doesn't take place. And likewise, actually, on that, I mean, to what you talk about producing fast bowlers, I think Matt Pott's a really good example. It's not just about producing fast bowlers, it's producing skill for bowlers. So I think actually this winter shouldn't be seen as like a doom and gloom exercise for guys who are 80, 81 mile an hour. It's a chance to put on 2 mile an hour, get yourself to 83, and work on skills that, even if you're not rapid, can take, you know, can have success on flat pitches. Because, as I say, Matt Potts is not, you know, is 6, 7, 8 mile an hour slower than Jamie Overton, but, you know, has had the same success because he's found the skills to wear teams down, to break teams down on good surfaces. So it shouldn't be, I think this win should be seen as an opportunity for players to upskill, as much as some guys are not going to hit Harmy's speed because they're not 6'4", 6'5", with, you know, the natural, you know, physique and the natural skill set that allowed him and obviously has allowed, you know, all those guys with those stress fractures at the moment to hit those speeds. So there is, look at Jimmy Anderson. We talk about producing fast bowlers, really. England is still being led by two guys bowling 84 mile an hour. It's just that they've got the skills to do it. And I think that is almost, well, that is certainly as important, because there are more guys who can't bowl 90 mile an hour than can bowl 90 mile an hour. So it's working out that you've got to, it's working out a skill set that can survive and thrive on these pitches if you don't have that natural physique, I think, isn't it?
Until they go overseas. But anyway, that's...
We say that. England's best bowler in Australia last year was Ollie Robinson.
Yeah, you say they go overseas, but the problem England have had in this sort of 18 months that we've had is that we've got so no confidence in our cricket whatsoever. We go overseas now to Pakistan, we've got a chance. We've got New Zealand now, we've got a chance. Off the back of, well, we're 2 from 2. If we end up being 4 from 6, 4 from 5 from 7, whatever it is, if we can win more cricket matches this summer than we lose, we stand a better chance of going to Pakistan with our heads up and chests out than our heads down and thinking, here we go again. If Joe doesn't get a double 100 in the first innings, we're not going
to
win.
I think even if England were not to win another test, don't say another test this summer, if England were to win one more test this summer, I think they would still, it's almost less about, I think what all the players said about that Trent Bridge test appears to be that McCullum's take on it was very much the result is almost secondary to the way we play. And I think England have shown just in these last two tests, it's almost not just about the winning. Because if you can, I think the self belief they'll have gained just from those two wins will show them, you know, will sound like instead, even if they do go on a run of losses, because they will know that they can win games.
Plus, they scored runs. That's the top and bottom of England English cricket at the top level in England. We've never had an issue with wickets. Going back 25 years, we've never had a problem with wickets because we'll always create chances in this country and we've always been able to get wickets. The problem we've had done is we are in England, a good score in England is around about 400. A good score overseas is not 400. It's not 400, it's 500. And I think we don't bat big enough overseas to give, even if our bowlers are sometimes redundant on cookable balls and flat pitches, We've still got skill sets to bowl teams out. The problem we've had is we've only had one bloke who could really say, I've scored runs in the last 2 years overseas to give us a chance to win games. And when he has, we've won. So that's the belief that these last two games is going to give, is that we're finding a way to win. Whatever way it is, we're getting into a 5-day contest. And it just seems the good thing about Brendan is we're going to find a way of getting out of this contest in 5 days by a win. And if it means we go and chase 280 on a fourth innings, fifth day pitch at Trent Bridge, we're going to find a way to do it. And that's the beauty in any sport, no matter what sport you play. The greatest saying from anything is, if you've got a contest going toe-to-toe for 90 minutes, for 80 minutes in rugby or whatever, you stick with that team and you find a way to get over the line. And you'll get better from it. And I think that's what they've done.
We're going to have to wrap this up, guys, because we do have to talk some county cricket. I've also got Mark Wood on the line here. I've also got Mark Wood on the phone, Nick. He wants to talk to you about you saying Ollie Robinson was England's most successful bowler in the Ashes. I've got Stuart Broad as well here. He wants to mention he took more wickets than Ollie Robinson.
Don't say that to Brody. Brody would be off his long run having a go.
Geoffrey Archer wants to get in contact with you as well. He says, if he'd been there, he would have been more successful than Ollie Robinson as well. But anyway, we can revisit that. Okay, let's get on with the show.
Moments of the week.
Okay, the big moments then, really. I saw Goffey on Sunday. Harmy, he was part of the TalkSport commentary team for the second Netherlands England ODI, which thankfully got going in the end. Yeah, he was spitting because Yorkshire lost two games that they really should have won against Derbyshire. I mean, the South Group, okay, we are recording this before Surrey play Somerset. Actually, I imagine the rest of the group want Surrey to win that, because if Somerset beat Surrey, then the top two, it looks like it's going to be as it is. Surrey are going to qualify. Somerset look like they're going to as well. If they beat Surrey, then it almost certainly will. The North group, though, wow, that is a ridiculous group. That's, we talk about the group stages being too long, but I agree with the South group. You could just finish that one now. But the North group, that's a proper competition.
If you take the top two away from the South group, it is similarly congested, isn't it? I think James Curtley admitted a couple of nights ago that he reckons Sussex are done now, but and Kent, who obviously won it only last September, have been a bottom, have only won twice. I actually watched Kent on Sunday at Lords, and it was very weird because it's mostly the same side that won the Blast last season, and they just look a million miles off it. They've got a lot, I think they've got a lot of guys out of nick at the same time, which is not really where you want to be. But if you get rid of Kent and Sussex from there, you've effectively got Essex, Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Glamorgan, Middlesex to push with their pretty inferior net run rate, fighting for what? For two spots, if you discount Surrey and Somerset, who I'd be amazed if there was a year when 17 points, which Surrey have got now, didn't get you through at the end of the group stage. They're almost certainly through, aren't they? And I think the North group has been really interesting because I think a couple of less fashionable sides, let's say. Well, you say less fashionable, but sides have actually been very successful in this competition in the past. And obviously, Northants, two-time winners. Leicestershire, obviously, three-time winners. They're not currently in the top four, but they're right in the mix. And then you've got Derbyshire, who are historically not very good at this competition. The last ever county to reach finals day. But Shah Massoud is Multan Sultan's leading run scorer in PSL history. Mickey Arthur has just done a brilliant job, hasn't he? And I think so far. And yeah, I mean, they've won four in a row, I think, haven't they? So it's a really tough group. And I think Northants have... I was at Wantage Road, actually, for the Charlotte Edwards Cup finals day a couple of Saturdays ago now, and I was speaking to a couple of Northants regulars there. They just could not stop talking about Chris Lynn, and the general gist did appear to be that Northampton was a little small for his hitting, and so they were just saying they'd never seen the ball hit so hard. But it's not... But crucially, I think, actually, with both Derbyshire and Northants, it's not just been Chris Lynn and Shah Massoud. At Northants, Josh Cobb's had a brilliant year, and he's a brilliant T20 cricketer. I think he's a two-time Blast final man of the match, once with Leicester, once with Northants. And Derby and Wayne Madsen's been a brilliant T20 player for a very long time. Mark Watt was a very astute signing, and they've had contributions all over. And it means that Notts, despite having a couple of really eye-catching wins, you know, languishing down in seventh, and Worcester, who when they've got their, you know, when they're at full strength, they've got Moeen Ali, Colin Munro, Dwayne Bravo, Ed Barnard, Pat Brown, Ed Pollock, all on the same side. They've won one from ten. It's been extremely competitive, really, isn't it? And even Yorkshire, who started the season pretty stacked, are outside that top four at the moment. So, it'd be really interesting next sort of couple of weeks, wouldn't it? As those last four games take place and sort of eight merge into four.
Harmy, you were commentating for Sky on Sunday. You weren't on Talk Sport duty. Durham were playing.
Durham went out there. The boys went out there, but I wouldn't say it just didn't go right for Durham. I thought Leicester played well. I thought the two spin bowling attacks were going to be good. I thought Leicester out bowled Durham on a surface which was responsive to spin, and I thought the Leicester players got themselves in a position for Jan Mulder to go and smash it at the end, and he got what he get 50 odd off about 34 balls. It was good because I had to give him man of the match. Nothing against him. I didn't want to give an overseas man of the match. I wanted to give it to Riyad Ahmed, who had four for about 15 off four overs. He bowled beautifully. His googly was amazing. 17-year-old to come and play on TV. He ran down the wicket, second ball when he was batting with a wicketkeeper standing up, and then he bowled four beautiful overs. So there is one to watch along with the other Parkinson, Callum. I thought Callum bowled fantastically well, and Durham weren't at the races. But like I said earlier, the problem that Durham have got at the minute, who would have thought if you try to plan for this year when you were looking at it at the end of last year, losing, having no Wood, no Stokes, no Cox, no Potts and no Lees, all five of them would have been in the side. So look, that's unfortunately where Durham's at the minute. I look at the groups and I see, like Nick was saying, I think there's a five teams playing for two places in the South group, all the way down to Middlesex. And the top two have gone, and even in the North group, Notts having one game less, two games less on Leicester. I'm thinking Notts might win this, because for Notts to get to finals day, they've got to win every game. So they've literally got to win every group game now. So what have they got? They've got five games left in this. They've got to win every single one. And if they do that, I wouldn't fancy playing them in the quarterfinals or getting them on finals day, no matter how well Lancashire or Northants or Surrey or Somerset have played. Because you get that in the IPL. Chennai used to do it all the time. Mumbai Indians done it a few times. The team that comes out of the pack, that finishes fourth in the group, who's had to win the last four games, have got a chance. So don't rule Notts out because they are. And one thing about Notts, they're big showtime, aren't they? The players that they've got, the big boys, on the big stage, when the cameras are on, they'll perform. They've just obviously not performed as well as what they would have. And I think the Yorkshire stuff with David Willey and Tom Cole Cadmore and all the politics that's gone on in recent times, which is just overshadowing the club again. I just wonder if that has affected the last two results for Otis Gibson and for Yorkshire, because they beat Durham on Friday night and you're thinking, right, the two games they've got, they're going to be top of the league, and all of a sudden they didn't get a point. And David Willey's stuff came out while he's away with England. I'm calling Cadmore's stuff's just come out, possibly one or two more that are going to go, and you're thinking, is that just derailed the Yorkshire juggernaut? So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a fascinating week. But if the likes of Yorkshire and Notts out of the North group, if they get to quarter final, they've got a great chance of going on and win it, because they've got to then win a lot of games between now and then. And the momentum they'll have going into it stands them in good stead, because they've got very, very good players.
You'd say Notts are the team in that North group that you would back to win five in a row, wouldn't you? If they had to win five in a row. Just with the stars and just with the firepower they've got, like top of the order, and then down to Dan Christian's experience, and they could have 10 days where they just blow five teams away, couldn't they? And then suddenly, as you say, and also crucially this year, momentum is a thing, because in the past you've had to wait two or three weeks for your quarter final, then another two or three weeks for your finals day, whereas this year you finish the group stage, you jump to your quarter final, and then finals day is in 3 weeks, isn't it? So I mean, 3 weeks from now, so. It is. I mean, Surrey's biggest issue almost is, how long can they sustain that run for? Obviously, they're 9 unbeaten, they're 8 wins and a rain off. So, for them, it's almost more a case of making sure they don't hit a wall come game 13, because you don't want to sort of limp into that quarter final having been so dominant up until now. But they've been, we watched a fair bit of them in the South. They've just been, they've just got so many options. I mean, you look at, you get most teams five down the blast, with a couple of exceptions, and I think there's you'd sort of breathe a sigh of relief to a point, wouldn't you? You sort of know that you've got beyond the big, certainly the established stars at least. But Kieran Pollard walks out about at seven, and then you've got Jamie Overton at eight, and Jordan Clark, and Chris Jordan, and the hitters just keep on coming. And I assume you never feel safe, which is, I think, where Hampshire probably felt against at the Aegeus Bowl on, was that Friday night? No, sorry, on Sunday, when they were very competitive, and then Pollard hit, I think, 35 or 20 odd balls.
That could be dangerous, though. The minute you start feeling safe, and you stop doing what you've done in the first place to get you there, and it's like the momentum going all the way, the team's coming in.
Guys, we're going to have to move things on, but one thing I will say about Surrey, and I know I don't need any excuse to talk about Surrey, is, you know, Jamie Smith essentially was batting at number nine for three of the T20s, I think. Yeah, batted at nine. And then once Jason Roy got called up for England, Jamie Smith is opening the batting with Will Jacks. And he was open. He wasn't opening. He was coming in at number four in the county championship game against Somerset. So when you've got a wicketkeeper batsman who essentially can open in T20 or play at four in the four-day stuff, and he's down at nine. And then you've got a side where, I think we were at the same game, Nick, when Surrey used seven different bowlers and Sam Curran was playing and didn't bowl.
The other one is Jacks himself, who obviously, I mean, his off-spin's gone massively in the last 12 months, but he's, you know, he's played as Surrey's first choice off-spinner in the championship. He's batted at six, seven. He's obviously opening up in the blast with Roy, not bowling in all the games. I mean, it's such a malleable, I think, sort of well-oiled side at the moment. I also think Chris Jordan has used himself very intelligently. He's known...
He's captained very well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously played T20 cricket for England for years, and all over the world, but the way he's used himself, but I think he's brought himself on at the end of the power play once or twice, knowing he needs a wicket, and has taken a wicket. He's bowled himself at the end. He's saved himself the second half of the innings. It's been very streetwise.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get on with Race to Australia.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Race to Australia.
Okay, so by the time you listen or watch this, England would have played their third ODI. I hope that David Payne and Luke Wood get a game. It was great to see Bryden Cast play Harmy. Essentially, I felt really sorry for Netherlands, because the two things that England need within their test squad, actually, the two things that make the difference when you play test cricket, is to have a good leg spinner and a 90-mile-an-hour bowler, you know. And Netherlands were 36 for three, and Scott Edwards and Van Beek were coming up against Adil Rashid and Bryden Cast. And you just think, oof. But they got through it just somehow in Scott Edwards' position. But yeah, I thought it was great to see Bryden Cast playing, and, you know, it just indicates that There's another one coming off the Durham fast bowler factory that's going to be ready to play not just ODI cricket where nobody else can play. He looks the real deal.
He is the real deal. I said this last year, working on the Cricket Collective. I did a couple of games for TV last year up at Durham and highlighted what makes him quick, where he gets his pace from. That brace front leg, really high, tall action. His follow through, his right hip drives through, that's where he gets his pace from. It's like a javelin thrower. And he makes use of all of his height. He's got a beautiful action. He's unlucky to get an injury with the Lions in the winter. And this very program at the start of the year, one to watch, it was going to be Bryden Cast, but he wasn't fit. So I went with the other one, Matt Potts. they've not got similar characteristics, but they've got a similar mentality, which is they're pretty strong boys. And all they want to do is hit the pitch hard. Durham, what's it called now? The Seat Unique Riverside is a surface where the harder you hit it, the more chance you've got something to come out of it. Last week, to be fair, there should have been dot points last week because that's a poor pitch. With 590 played 600 and whatever, they're not great pitches. But I can see, they're trying to produce the fast bowler. There's got a little bit more in it for the ball. But once a year, you get a pitch like that with taking all the moistures out of it. But when I look at that boy play, he's got something special about him, and we just got to keep him fit. If England keep Cast fit, he'll play test matches. He'll play test matches because he also fits in that number eight category, 8-9. He's probably not as good as a number eight as what Stuart Broad was in the past, or not quite as good as what an Ashley Giles was that balanced our side up. But he still can, I think he can still get 50s. Giles got 50s for England. Still think he can get sort of fit, 50s for England at number eight. But he gives you something different on a flat pitch, hitting the deck hard. He is a very, very good bowler. And England will need him because it doesn't look like Jofra's coming back anytime soon. I've not spoke to Mark Wood, but it just seems that Mark's still not 100%. It wouldn't surprise me if Mark Wood get rolled out for the 100. If he gets through the 100, one or two of the South African test matches, and they'll keep him for the World T20 because he's so important. With all the other bowlers gone, he's so important that England won't want him to sort of waste anything at Durham. Thaqib doesn't look as though he's coming back anytime soon. Jofra doesn't look as though they're coming back anytime soon. So you look at what the options are, and Bryden Cast, for me, is a very, very good option in not just one day cricket, but when we go to Pakistan and test matches. If England feel as though they need him for the World T20 in the shorter format, they won't let him go and pack. I think they might keep him away from the Pakistan trip. But if they feel as though, and the World Cup coming in the summer. But I think if England needs some firepower, I think he'd do a good job in Pakistan because he hits a pitch hard.
And what about Phil Salt, Nick? He's been, he's got 100, he's got a 70 odd. He's really impressed me whenever he's played for England. He hasn't had a lot of opportunities. But, a big blow for Sussex to lose him. And he looks ready to make the step up if and when a position makes itself available.
He's just got, it's almost like he's got, when I watch him back, it's sort of got like the bottom hand dominance of like a Johnny Bairstow as kind of opener. And then, but sort of that rank fearlessness that has made Jason Roy so big, this England team for the last 7 years as well. Like he's almost the epitome of being like next off that production line, isn't he? In terms of just the complete sort of like selflessness to the way he attacks the power play, but the fact that he doesn't particularly rein it in afterwards. He's almost sort of like there for he's there for a good time and hopefully for a long time. And that is, I think Morgan spoke about it ahead of Jason Roy's 100th ODI on Sunday, and almost as much as Roy's runs, it was always about his philosophy and sort of the way that he set the tone and the way that he looked to attack it at the top. And the number of times that Roy could have walked to 100 once he was 70 not out against Netherlands on Sunday, but well above the rate and everything, but eventually caught short, third man trying to whack one out of the ground. And that's I think that the approach that he's brought is not dissimilar to the one that Salt brings. It's just extremely cavalier, but extremely, but it's everything England would want in their next opener. Because also you've got to do that to be England's next opener. Because
there was an England one and a backup wicketkeeper. Wicketkeeper opening bat.
100%, and exactly, and because and crucially, it's what you have to be, because if it's not going to be you, it's going to be Tom Banton or Will Smead or God, I'm going to forget so many guys here just by reading, you know, but or Tom Coley-Cadmore, or you know, when he was available, or Alex Hales. There are Will Jacks. There are so many guys. Liam Livingstone could do that job. Moen Ali has done that job. There are millions of guys you're competing with, and guys who, you know, even just watching guys who are nowhere near at the moment. You know, someone like, you know, Joe Cracknell at Middlesex, whacks it in the blast. Saw Michael Pepper's got big runs in the blast. You know, batting in a similarly aggressive way. Everyone's doing it, so you've got to do it better than everyone else.
Salt and Peppers.
Salt, but yeah, well, that's the dream partnership, isn't it? Salt and Pepper up at the top together. It's the only way of doing it, and you can't afford to take your foot off the gas. Almost, you've got to be smart, and I think Salt has that smartness. I think Salt has developed that game smart, both when he was at Sussex and now at Lancs. But yeah, it is the most competitive spot in English sport, isn't it? Certainly in English cricket. You know, to be the next one after Roy or Bairstow.
The thing I'm pleased about Salt is he hasn't missed his chance. I think he was under more pressure than Jason Roy or Josh Butler or anybody else, because if he doesn't score runs, somebody else takes place the next time, and it's a miles away. The really good thing I've enjoyed about what Phil's done is he's took his chance. And if he turns around and says, well, Johnny comes in, Ben comes, Stokes comes in, whatever, well, I'm still knocking on that door, and good on him for that.
Good stuff. Okay, we're running out of time, guys. Let's get to the mailbag.
The mailbag.
Okay, we're approaching the end of the show. We have had a question in, though, from Ian Hemmings, who says, what's going on at Yorkshire? Two players leaving in David Willey and Tom Coley-Cadmore. I know earlier in the show, Harmy, you were saying that maybe that had, you know, some of the behind-the-scenes shenanigans might have contributed to Yorkshire's defeats. I saw Goffey on Sunday. Without revealing too much, he spoke to me about both of those players. And I think the Tom Coley-Cadmore departure has been on the cards for a while. So that's not a huge surprise. And the David Willey one, look, he's from Northampton. His family's from that part of the world. He's got a young family. I think the feeling is good luck to him if he wants to go back to Northampton. So I've also spoken to him. They could be signing somebody. There's lots going on there. So if you're a Yorkshire fan, I wouldn't be too concerned. I think obviously there's a lot going on in terms of what happened in the past, trying to right those wrongs. That's taking up a lot of time. But I know of one bowler that they're looking to bring in. And if they bring him in, Yorkshire fans will have a happy end to the season, I imagine. So I don't think there's too much to be worried about in terms of the playing side. Those two defeats, I think basically their batting's where it should be. Their bowling needs a little bit of work in the T20s. But then, of course, they've got some players back from England duty, and they're a very, very strong side. You know, does Joe Root even get into their T20 side if, you know, they've got all of their players?
He captained at the start, so I think he would get back in. Look, the thing that, from a Yorkshire's point of view, it is a fantastic cricket club who has had troubles, and it will heal themselves hopefully very, very soon, and work to try and make Yorkshire the best they possibly can be under a new start and a new regime. Not to withstand what's happened before, I still think they've got to address quite a few things in that point of view, and they're trying their best. But what I will say is, and Goffey will be saying it, if they don't want to play for Yorkshire, then fair enough, go play somewhere else. If David Willey wants to go and play for Northampton, that's fine. Whatever drives David Willey to go back to Northampton, because he's a Northampton boy, so be it. Same as Coley-Cadmore. People will want to play for Yorkshire. And when people want to play for a big county like Yorkshire, Lancashire, Surrey and all the big boys, no doubt there'll be a better side for it. So I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Yorkshire member at this minute in time from on the field stuff, because I think they're going in the right direction. I still think there's a mile to go, a huge amount to go off the field. But if they can get that right, hopefully, yeah, healing times will be good. And if people don't want to play for him, I think I'll probably taking the words out of Goffey's mouth, then we'll move on and we'll get somebody else that does want to play for us.
Absolutely. Well, look, guys, we're going to have to bring it to a close then. Next week, we will be looking back. The county championship's back. I'm glad Nick reminded me before we went to air. Two huge games, Essex versus Hampshire in county championship Division 1 and Nottinghamshire versus Middlesex in Division 2. So they both get underway on the 26th. So we will be reflecting on those matches and much, much more here on Following On County Cricketer. Thanks for joining us.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.